Welcome to Native America Calling. From Studio 49 in Albuquerque, I'm Tara Gatewood. Buffalo are highly regarded in many Native American tribes. The last remaining original bison herd in the U.S. resides in the Yellowstone National Park. Sometimes this herd roams beyond the borders of the park, causing conflict between ranchers, bison advocates, and tribes. Over the years, each of these sides have weighed in. Today, we'll take a look at what it means to manage a herd and what happens when profit conflicts with nature. We're talking about bison right after National Native News.
This is National Native News. I'm Antonia Gonzalez. Alaska's Governor Bill Walker Monday asked for a 30-day extension to consider issues in a case tribes say will determine how the Indian Child Welfare Act is carried out in the state. KNBA's Jocelyn Estes has more.
Under ICWA, Native Americans have preference in adopting Native children, but a 2014 Alaska Supreme Court ruling allowed a non-Native couple to adopt a Yupik child because her grandmother Elise of Tununuk hadn't filed a petition to adopt. Elise's attorney, Lloyd Miller, who specializes in Native American law, says the grandmother met all such requirements with her repeated statements to officials and court testimony that she wanted to adopt her granddaughter. Miller says the Walker administration is right to take the time to look at the larger implications of Tununuk versus Alaska.
This case is a potentially explosive case and could well define the administration's position in Alaska Native affairs, and in particular, the relationship the administration is going to have with tribes in Alaska.
Alaska Assistant Attorney General Jacqueline Schaefer says the state is looking for ways to work with tribes to ease adoption requirements and to improve children's services to Alaska Native communities. The state's request for an extension comes after the Alaska Federation of Natives and all the Native regional nonprofit organizations in Alaska asked the state to change its position. Reporting in Anchorage, I'm Jocelyn Estes.
Meanwhile, Alaska Governor Bill Walker Monday met with representatives from 42 communities in interior Alaska. Walker, who's been in office for more than 90 days, says one of his main goals is tribal relations. He says he wants to go beyond consultation by having tribes help in decision-making. Walker says he's inherited litigation and is catching up to take time before making any decisions. He also touched on subsistence and health care. Walker says the state is making an aggressive push with a bill coming out this week on Medicaid expansion. He says there's only 40 days left in the legislative session. Walker made the comments before the Tanana Chiefs Conference annual convention taking place this week in Fairbanks. Members of the Rosebud Sioux Tribal Council in South Dakota held an informal meeting on dog attacks just hours before a fatal incident on a woman Saturday. Jim Kent has more.
Rosebud Sioux Tribal Council Representative Wayne Frederick says it's tragically ironic that Julia Charging Whirlwind's death was almost prevented.
There's actually a private individual in St. Francis. She actually started this dog kennel. She said that if the tribe would approve a contract with her, or at least to approve her services so that tribal monies could be spent on her services, then we could employ her to go up and investigate this dog pack.
Derek Claremont has lived on the Rosebud Reservation all his life and says dog attacks are not the norm. He agrees that this incident could have been avoided, but from another perspective.
The day before, my sister had called the Rosebud Sioux Tribe Police Department because these same dogs had almost got my little nephew. We called them and they haven't showed up. They never showed up.
Claremont says he hates to point a finger at the tribal police, but that's where he feels the blame lies. Meanwhile, Tribal Council Representative Frederick says tribal police did respond to a call 4 days prior to the fatal attack, but couldn't find the dogs in question.
They went door to door today and they actually rounded up a bunch of dogs and they actually disposed of what they believed were the problematic dogs.
For his part, Derek Claremont says the problem isn't the dogs, it's the people who own them and don't know how to care for or train them. For National Native News, I'm Jim Kent.
And I'm Antonia Gonzalez.
National Native News is produced at the Annenberg National Native Voice Studios in Albuquerque, New Mexico by Kawanak Broadcast Corporation, with offices in Anchorage, Alaska. Funding is provided by the Corporation for Public Broadcasting, the Annenberg Foundation, and the Ford Foundation.
Support by the Association of American Indian Physicians. Colon cancer is the second leading cause of cancer death in American Indians 50 and over. For yourself, your family, and our community, get screened. Info at AmericanIndianCancer.org.
When you file online for your PFD, every Alaskan can support National Native News. Just use Pick, Click, Give, and select KNBA-FM Kawanak Broadcast Corporation. With one donation at a time, good things will happen all over Alaska.
Native Voice 1, the Native American Radio Service.
This is Native America Calling. I'm your host, Tara Gatewood. Today we're talking about bison. To many tribes, bison or buffalo are an essential part of Native history, culture, and survival. The American bison, which is their scientific name, used to populate a majority of the U.S. before westward expansion, when they were almost hunted to extinction. And the descendants of some of North America's before-contact buffalo, that herd today lives in the United Yellowstone National Park, which covers more than 3,000 square miles across Idaho, Montana, and Wyoming. And Yellowstone estimates the herd to be between 2,300 to 5,000. And today we'll learn more about the bison and how they are managed. We'll also hear about this special herd and the concerns they are raising with both people who are trying to keep them safe and living life as close to nature as possible, as well as people who see their migration away from Yellowstone as a threat to surrounding livestock. And if there's something you would like to say about how this particular herd is being managed, we want to hear from you. Our phone lines are open. The number to join us is 1-800-996-2848. Let's go ahead and bring in our first voice to our conversation today. Joining us now from Rapid City, South Dakota, is Jim Stone, and he is the executive director of the Inner Tribal Buffalo Council, and Jim is Yankton Sioux. Welcome back to Native America Calling, Jim.
Hey, thank you.
And Jim, thank you for being with us today. Can you tell us more about how special the bison herd is at the Yellowstone National Park?
You know, the importance of the Yellowstone herd is that, you know, it was one of the last remaining herds as, you know, the extermination of the buffalo occurred across basically all of North America. You know, you had millions and millions of animals, tens of millions of animals that were reduced down to just small remnant herds that were, you know, usually, typically the majority of them were held by private owners, private landowners that at some point had attempted to create, you know, this creature called the beefalo by breeding them to take some of the better genetic qualities of buffalo and transfer them into cattle. And so you had these small herds. You know, the Yellowstone herd was one of the only ones that was actually roaming in the wild, you know, as identified by Teddy Roosevelt and Hornaday as they were going out to try to collect specimens for the New York Zoo. You know, they were unable to obtain animals, and so at that point the effort was made, you know, to restore or preserve that lineage of animals, which started out with, you know, 20, 30 animals. At some point, you know, the park itself brought in other animals from outside to supplement that herd, and it was allowed to pretty much grow, you know, up into the early 60s. It was still kind of managed. They did efforts for population control. They harvested animals. They hunted some of them. They sold some of them. In the middle of the 60s, then they stopped any kind of management activities. And so you go from the mid-60s, when there was about 450 animals in Yellowstone National Park, to the mid-1990s, you know, the herd had grown to 4,500 animals, which is, you know, when kind of the problems there started with the herd of the animals, you know, migrating outside of Yellowstone National Park. So, you know, they are, I guess, you know, symbolic of the wild free-ranging buffalo that used to cover this continent, you know, but there has always been some idea, some concept of management with the herd. It was just, you know, for that 30-year period where all activity was stopped that kind of put us in the position we're in today.
All right, and we're going to learn more about that. And if there's something you'd like to add to the conversation, give us a call, 1-800-996-2848. We also invited the National Park Service to participate in our show today. They did not respond to our invitation by the start of our broadcast today. Jim, a park representative is not with us to tell us more about the conflict that has sprung up with the bison moving beyond the park's borders. Please do tell us more about why people are concerned about Yellowstone bison leaving the park.
You know, the majority of the concerns are based around the fact that, you know, the herd is infected with brucellosis. Brucellosis is a disease which causes, you know, buffalo, elk, cattle to abort a fetus when they're pregnant. And so, you know, there was a huge effort starting in the early 1900s, 30s, 50s, to eliminate brucellosis in the United States. And right now, the only reservoir of it exists within Yellowstone National Park, which, you know, working for the organization I do, you know, Intertribal Buffalo Council, which started as Intertribal Bison Cooperative, you know, we're really dedicated to the restoration of buffalo to tribal lands and have become really active in a lot of the buffalo herds across the country. You know, one question that I continually ask people is, you know, what is their view and their position on the fact that, you know, a lot of efforts are being made to basically preserve a diseased herd of animals, you know, and I push the park to say, okay, you know, this is a disease that was brought by non-tribal people into this country, contaminated this herd of animals, this important herd of animals. You know, how are we trying to attempt to look at correcting that problem? And that's one of the reasons why, as an organization, you know, we support getting animals out of Yellowstone alive so we can restore herds of disease-free Yellowstone buffalo.
All right. And Jim, you know, as we do mention that into the program, brucellosis, can you tell us a little bit about what that is, maybe in case somebody is hearing of that word for the first time? You know, what is brucellosis? How does it happen?
Brucellosis is, as I said, a disease that is transmitted basically from animals by contact with the birthing material from animals as they basically abort a fetus. So if a buffalo was infected with brucellosis, what would typically happen is an actively infected animal would basically abort its first fetus, and the disease is only transmitted through physical contact. So it would mean that a cow has had to go nose the materials during a certain time while the disease is still living. You know, there's been no scientific evidence ever that shows that brucellosis has been transmitted from buffalo to cattle. All transmissions have been elk-related because those species intermingle a lot more than buffalo and cattle when given the opportunity.
So this is only happening when, you know, a birth has happened. It's not happening constantly or if a buffalo sneezes on somebody or anything like that.
Yeah, it's only during that certain event, you know, which is typically as you get into this time of year, which is kind of why they have the time constraints on the tolerance for bison in Montana, you know, within the state. And really, you know, the problem is basically because of the park's management of them as wildlife, you know, allows them to basically cross park boundaries. You know, this is not a fenced park. The majority of the other parks are fenced parks. You know, they're basically allowing them to walk into Montana, which is creating this situation. Because of the Bureau of Land Management policies, even the Forest Service lands and the other lands, federal lands that are bordering Yellowstone National Park fall under the jurisdiction of the regulations and land management policies of the state of Montana, which even though there are other federal lands that these buffalo can go on to, you know, they're not tolerated under state law of Montana. So, you know, these laws of Montana are really, you know, the problem.
And we mentioned Yellowstone extends, you know, to Montana, also Wyoming and Idaho, I believe. Do any of those other states have issues with, you know, the buffalo herd?
No. You know, they have the same kind of scenarios where you have animals that are migrating onto other Forest Service lands, out onto private lands in different areas. But the difference, you know, particularly in Wyoming is, you know, they've been able to utilize a hunt to prevent animals, basically to educate the animals where they can go. You know, someone's shooting at you, you're not going to go there very often. But they've also, you know, implemented some land management rules and regulations which do not allow for cattle, breeding cattle, female cattle, cows, to be on the landscape at the same time the buffalo are occupying it on these federal lands. And so there's no issue of contact there. You know, a very simple kind of solution. You know, they change that land management laws and regulations, which, you know, they bring in steers or bulls, and there's no risk of transmission if the buffalo stay there year-round. And so the state of Wyoming has a different approach than the state of Montana, which is why you don't hear of the same issues.
All right. And one more question for you on learning more about bison there, Jim. When a buffalo is giving birth, does that happen throughout the year or just a specific season?
Typically, you know, we see it in herds spreading from, you know, May, June, some April. There's kind of that little range there. You know, the basic action starts in May and it spreads May, June, you know, maybe some mid-April. It's kind of, that's kind of the, I guess, the season that it occurs in.
All right. Thanks for that, Jim. Again, if you would like to join us today, we're taking a look at bison management. Specifically, we're looking at bison in the Yellowstone Park. And you're welcome to join the conversation today. And if you have a comment about the bison, or as some say, buffalo in Yellowstone, we'd like to hear it. But we'd also like to hear from you. If you connect to our conversation, maybe you understand management of wildlife, you know, through either wolves or wild horses. You know, what are the parallels? What can we learn from some of those movements about managing buffalo or bison in Yellowstone? Call us right now, 1-800-996-2848. I'd like to go ahead and get the tribal view on this, too. Joining us now from Fort Belknap, Montana, is President Mark Azure, and he is the president of the Fort Belknap Indian Community, and he is Assiniboine. Welcome to Native America Calling, President Azure.
Good morning.
And President Azure, thank you for being with us here today on our program. And as we learn more about what, you know, bison in the area mean, anything you'd like to add? Jim gave us a good view of kind of the history on it. Anything else you want to pick up on?
I think towards the end of Jim's comments is really the route for tribes, at least here in Montana, and hopefully not only tribes but individuals across the U.S. But for us here in Montana and those of us that have buffalo on our tribal lands or are wanting buffalo on our tribal lands, that the state of Montana has taken a very aggressive approach to the animals that migrate out of Yellowstone Park into the state, and it's been a management style over the years that that we never did agree with, and it was that when they enter the state of Montana, that the state would put them down, and it would it just for tribes, I think it goes against everything that we stand for, in that it was more of a slaughter than it was a management tool in our minds. And so 15, 20 years ago, there were some wise gentlemen, tribal members, that thought there should be an alternative to the way they were being slaughtered. And they sat down and they came up with an idea that still makes sense today. And it took them a long time to get to that point. But in March of 2012, it finally came true that we were allowed to not slaughter all of those animals that came out of the park, but we were able to bring them, in essence, back home, to the northern plains where they once roamed, in millions of numbers, that we were given an opportunity to give back in our minds to a magnificent animal that all across Indian country we all know that was a huge part of how we sustained ourselves. So, that would be, I guess, my main point here is that we can't turn our back on an animal that sustained our ancestors for as long as it did, and it continues to sustain tribes in different ways that have animals on their tribal lands. So just the outright attack, in my mind, on how this animal is managed when it comes out of the park and definitions that want to be put on it by different departments within the state government, and that we have a handful of state legislators that on behalf of ranchers and farmers, not all, but on some here in the state, that feel like they're going to dictate to tribes on how we help in seeing this animal continue and grow. So,
all right. And President Azure, I want to put a call out to our listening audience as well. If there are any farmers or ranchers who also want to share their thoughts on the program today, we want to hear from you. 1-800-996-2848. That's also 1-800-99-NATIVE. And President Azure, as we talk about the tribe's involvement, was your tribe a part of the movement to restore the herd that we heard about earlier?
Yes. Just for history's sake, Fort Belknap has owned buffalo since the mid-70s. And when this the issue with the animals, the buffalo wandering out of Yellowstone Park into the state of Montana, and then how the state was dealing with it, well, that sparked our interest because we didn't agree with it. So we've been involved in this process, like I said, for 15, 20 years now, and going wherever we had to go and speaking to whoever would listen. And sometimes they didn't listen. They wouldn't. They refused. But we didn't give up. And we kept at it that, hey, there's another solution to what you consider a problem. And we finally did get folks to listen and help us with this process of if this animal isn't a carrier of this disease, brucellosis, then let's don't put it down. Let's find an alternative. The tribal land is an excellent place to undertake that. And so at the Fort Peck Assiniboine Sioux Reservation and here at Fort Belknap, the Assiniboine and Grovon, we raised our hand and said, we'll be the first to test this and we'll show those folks that don't think that we can do this, we'll show them that we can. And so from 2012, March 19th, to be specific, almost 3 years to the day, those animals were taken out of that quarantine facility near Gardner and brought to the Fort Peck Indian Reservation and released. And all of the scare tactics and the hype and the fear that was generated never came to be.
And President Azure, what do the numbers look like there with the bison that are under tribal management right now? What is the size of the herds?
Well, I couldn't quote Fort Peck. I know the Yellowstone animals that came in 2012, I believe there were 63 or 65. And The original intent was that Fort Belknap would receive 50% of that number. So in 2013, we undertook dividing those animals up between the two reservations. And August of 2013, Fort Belknap received 32. And so today, we have 44, I believe, and no calves have hit the ground yet this year. So we're at 44 with that herd. Our original herd is approximately about 700 animals.
And President Azure, you know, a lot of what I'm hearing about the controversy in Yellowstone is because the numbers have gotten too big. And that's why they're putting it on the table of, you know, we need to manage the herd and bring those numbers down. Any thoughts on how that plays into things? It's not necessarily, or what we're being presented with, it's all about the numbers. Any thoughts on that? You know, if, you know, decades from now and the tribe's herd grows, any thoughts on how numbers play an issue? Should we even be worrying about those?
Good question, Tara. In my mind, we get hung up on numbers. And so over the years, we've decided that we should look at where these animals live, and we should try to decide in applying how farmers and ranchers use their land in dictating how many animals should be there, and is there enough grass, and it bothers me that we do that, because these are wild. They're wildlife. When the president years and years and years ago decided to set that aside for America to be able to go and look at what it used to be like, I don't think this model of deciding how many animals should be on the land to what the grass was going to be like. So even with the 900, this goal that the park is trying to reach every year to reduce that herd, I don't think we should get hung up on a number, because usually it's Mother Nature that dictates how these animals, when and how they come out of the park. And you know, if it's a mild winter, then we won't see, and then we won't get this goal of 900, and that pushes us back. But even to say the park should only hold 2,000 or 5,000 or 3,500 animals, I don't really agree with that concept.
All right, President Azure, I got to take a break here. And again, if you'd like to join us, what do you think about what you just heard? What about concentrating on the numbers when it comes to managing bison in the area of Montana and Yellowstone? What do you think? We know we broadcast in many great places in the area. Folks, if you are chatting about this, share some of it with us. What do people think on this issue? Call us right now, 1-800-996-2848. It's also 1-800-99-NATIVE. Cesarean sections are major surgeries done to deliver a baby through an incision made in the mother's abdomen. The Centers for Disease Control has reported a quarter of births in the U.S. happen this way. Native American women have the lowest rates. Why is that, and is that a good or bad thing? Join us for the next Native America Calling.
Support provided by the Tribal Telecom and Technology Conference, Weaving Pathways Across the Digital Divide, May 4th through the 7th, 2015, at the Hotel Albuquerque at Old Town, bringing together tribes and the telecom and technology industries to pursue solutions that advance digital opportunities for American Indian and Alaska Native communities. The annual Tribal Telecom Golf Classic will be held May 4th at the Isleta Eagle Golf Course. Info at tribaltelecomconference.com.
Welcome back to Native America Calling. I'm Tara Gatewood from Isleta Pueblo, and thanks for joining us today. And if you'd like to learn more about our program, please visit our website. It's got a new face, NativeAmericaCalling.com. And you can also sign up for weekly newsletters, which we send out every Friday on our website, too. And today, we've been taking a look at how bison are managed in the Yellowstone National Park. Our guests are Jim Stone from the Intertribal Buffalo Council. Also, we have Fort Belknap President Mark Azure on the line with us. And if you have a comment, give us a call. The number is 1-800-996-2848. That's also 1-800-99-NATIVE. We got a caller on the line we're going to bring in right now. We have Donna in Pocatello, Idaho, tuned in on KISU. Donna, what would you like to know?
Well, I wanted to ask President Azure. He mentioned that they aborted their offspring. Is it their first born, or do they do it every time? And I was wondering if vaccination has proven successful.
Okay, thank you for your call, Donna. President Azure, that question was for you.
Yeah, I don't think, I think it was Jim that talked about brucellosis and the disease, and he might be the better subject matter to direct that question to.
All right, thanks. Go ahead, Jim.
Yeah, typically it is their first offspring that the fetus will be aborted on. Currently, there's two issues around the vaccination. There is no effective vaccination. The vaccinations that they have are, you know, in the range of 98% effective with cattle, but only in the 30% range effective with buffalo. And there's also no way of testing the buffalo while they're alive to determine if they're actively infected. The only test they have now can show if they've been exposed to it, but it doesn't necessarily mean they're actively infected. You know, it's kind of like when we get vaccinations, you test us, yeah, we've been exposed to things, but we've developed antibodies which would be fighting the disease, and we're not actively infected. With buffalo, there's no field test which would allow you to determine whether they're actively effective, and there is no vaccine currently. What the scientists have said is that in order to get an effective vaccine, it would take about 40 years and $40 million. And so, you know, the idea is, you know, if there's effective vaccination for cattle, vaccinate the livestock, not the wildlife.
All right. Thanks for that, Jim. Donna, also thank you for your questions there in Pocatello, Idaho. And if you have questions too, join us, 1-800-996-2848. And we're also being told that this issue with the bison in the Yellowstone is also affecting farmers and ranchers. If you have an opinion, you're out there, farmers and ranchers, call in, tell us your view too. 1-800-996-2848. We're learning more about this, and we're going to learn a little bit more by bringing in another voice today. Now joining us from West Yellowstone, Montana, is Goodshield Aguilar. He's an advocate for the Buffalo Field Campaign, and he's also a musician. We want to go ahead and welcome him into our talking circle. He comes to us from the Lakota and Yaqui Nations. Welcome to Native America Calling, Goodshield.
Thank you very much for having us today.
Great to have you here.
It's a beautiful day out here in Montana. There's 170 buffalo on Horse Butte, and they're being buffalo right now, which is a good day.
All right. And Goodshield, you know, as we further the conversation and hear why people are concerned about the herd there in Yellowstone and also extending across the state of Montana, what is your biggest concern when it comes to bison?
Well, I've been involved since 2000. My auntie was Rosalie Little Thunder, who just passed last August. So she got me involved in this. I was actually a salmon activist in Northern California before I got involved in this. So I come out here every winter to be with the buffalo. And it's, I mean, if people were out here to actually witness what's happening when buffalo are being chased with helicopters and snowmobiles and, you know, Department of Livestock agents on horseback, and to see these babies, you know, newborn babies breaking their legs, and, you know, they'll chase them for up to 15 miles in one day. I mean, a lot of people don't know that that's actually what is happening. I mean, there's a talk of brucellosis, which actually is not an issue at all. There has never been a documented case of transmission from buffalo to a cattle. And but they're, you know, they, the Department of Livestock have used this. I think they, in the year, I think it was 2000, they created this legislature called MCA 81-2-120, which basically gave the Department of Livestock the ultimate say-so over the fate of the buffalo. So they pretty much considered buffalo to be livestock or an animal in need of disease control. And coming from a cultural perspective, that's an absurd idea. I mean, there were only about 23 left in the, you know, at the turn of the century, and Yellowstone Park was started to protect these last buffalo. And eventually that herd was able to grow. And, you know, this is the last genetically pure, free-roaming wild buffalo left. There's other other buffalo out there that are genetically pure, but a lot of them are raised, you know, behind a fence. Their diets are subsidized with alfalfa and grass, which they pretty much stop being wild at that point. And, you know, we advocate that first and foremost, you know, I want to say that we're not opposed to hunting. We're not opposed to, you know, relocation of buffalo. But before those buffalo are relocated, they're subject to being quarantined from anywhere between 5 and 8 years. And they're tested constantly for this disease, brucellosis. And just the conditions that they're under even just the quarantine program, is, it's a desecration. And, you know, and that's aside from the slaughter that they do.
Good Shield, I know this has you very concerned. I also want to hear your thoughts on a date that I know a lot of people who are following this closely and are having conversations about it. May 15th is a significant date when it comes to bison management in the Yellowstone area. Please share with our listening audience why people really get talking as we get closer to May 15th.
Well, the state of Montana has a zero tolerance for buffalo. So right around May 15th, if any buffalo are out of the park, if they can't haze them back into the park boundaries, they'll just kill them. And when in 1997, when this situation was really escalating, that's pretty much what they did. They would kill them as soon as they left the park. And because of the Buffalo Field Campaign's presence here, documenting it with, you know, video cameras and different media, they started to do something they call, what they call hazing, which they, you know, as soon as the buffalo leave the park, they chase them back with helicopters and snowmobiles into the park boundaries. But they're trying to migrate down to the lower elevation so that they can give birth to their babies. So a lot of these, you know, mothers are still pregnant or they had just given birth. And, you know, this is the introduction to these new buffalo calves being born, is being chased by helicopters. And, you know, it doesn't just affect buffalo. It affects the entire ecosystem. I mean, bears, eagles, elk, deer. So it's, you know, that's something that we witness out here a lot. And, you know, we invite anybody to come out here and witness and stand with the buffalo and actually see what happens with them. And, you know, that's the main thing we're opposed to, is the treatment of them. We're not opposed to hunting. We're not opposed to relocation. It's the treatment of our most sacred beings here.
Okay. And again, I want to put the number out there. You know, it, as you're hearing some of this, does any of it sound concerning to you? Call us right now, 1-800-99-NATIVE. Or maybe you're hearing some of this and you also manage livestock and you're hearing and saying, well, that's what happens. You know, we want to hear from you too. Give us a call. Phone lines are open, 1-800-996-2848. Good Shield, we're going to go to our phone lines now. Let's go ahead and bring in Nikos, who's in Polson, Montana, tuned in online. Nikos, welcome to the hour. And what are you thinking?
Oh, thank you. Hello, my relations. I'm a person from the Confederated Salish, Kootenai, and Pend Oreille tribes of the Flathead Nation. I'm from a farming family. We've always been in Montana, and we have a sacred relationship with the bison. In particular, it's very concerning, the treatment of the Yellowstone bison herd. You know, they belong. It's a cultural resource, a sacred creature that belongs to all of the American peoples and the peoples of the Americas. And my family and myself, I feel it's very disgraceful that we are slaughtering the buffalo for an artificial number. The population parameters are artificial. They're not really based in science. It's based on, you know, people's managed conceptions of what the boundaries of the park are. So, you know, my tribe participates in the Intertribal Buffalo Council, and we've been instrumental in, you know, slaughtering what are the so-called surplus buffalo, but it's very divisive in our tribe. And I with great respect to all the people on the phone, all the people listening, we really need to rethink these bison management policies where it's not right the way we're treating them. It's I think it's wrong. And the treaty rights, the Treaty of 1855, guarantee our hunting, fishing, gathering rights for my peoples and throughout Montana and other beyond the current boundaries of Montana. We have a treaty right to hunt these creatures and absolutely support the hunting rights of our peoples. However, when the state of Montana, Department of Livestock, and then the National Park Service are complicit with the destruction of these creatures for scientifically questionable argument, which seems to benefit the beef industry more than does tribal peoples or the national interest, we need to take another hard look at it.
And Nikos, are there any questions that you have for some of the folks on the line, you know, as we talk about what's the best way to manage or solutions? Anything else you want to throw out there?
Well, I guess it's a question and a comment. The question is, what really needs to happen is we need tribal peoples and the American peoples to come together more. And the question is, rather than us arguing about who gets to hunt buffalo, the question is, are we protecting the genetic integrity of the last wild roaming buffalo in Yellowstone? That's the first question. The second one is, there's plenty of National Forest Service lands for the buffalo to roam. So the question is, the question is for everybody that's listening, in particular Jim Stone and Mr. Goodshield, can we bring more people together to honor our sacred relationship with the Yellowstone bison?
All right, Nikos, and he posed that question to our listening audience, too. What do you think? Call us right now, 1-800-996-2848. I want to take another caller here on the line with us today. We have Nita in Anchorage, Alaska, tuned in on KNBA. Nita, what do you think?
Good morning. Yeah, listening to this issue, for me, is a little bit confusing and stressful because in Alaska, you know, we have moose that roam. I have a mother and cow, actually three sets of mothers and cows that live on my property. It's 40 acres. And we can come home and have five moose in the front yard, or you might not see some for a few days. So they're allowed to roam from state lands to federal lands to private lands freely. And then buffalo up here, you know, we're trying to reestablish the wood bison and get them reestablished back in the state. And so the thought of killing off, you know, 900 animals is kind of outside of my realm of thinking. And I was just wondering, like, if they're contaminated with this biological organism, you know, are they edible by humans still or are they not? You know, is this going to waste? Is this the ultimate sin against our fellow animals? You know, is this meat used or is it wasted or what is done with this?
All right, Nita, great questions. Jim, can you help us with that?
Yeah, I could. You know, the meat is capable of being consumed. The only contaminant, the only possibility of disease transmission is through the birthing materials. And as an organization, you know, ITBC was not an active partner within what was going on in Yellowstone because, you know, you have tribal treaty hunting rights. You have a lot of local issues that were coming into play with the Yellowstone management, and we kind of backed out of the whole thing. And, you know, I've been working here for 8 years, and one of the things when we started looking at, you know, this concept of what's going on in Yellowstone, how is this management, or is it even management being done, you know, we sat down and we took a look at, you know, what is the respectful and humane way to treat the buffalo? Is it being treated the way it should be in what is going on? You know, we were on the outside watching what was going on, and one of the first things I looked at was exactly what you're talking about. You know, what is the usage of these animals? Whether you support their assumptions that they need to control that population, that there needs to be these target numbers, which, you know, is 3,000. It's a court-mandated number, that an artificial number. But everybody that's there has to kind of work towards that goal. And what I did was I looked at, you know, the year they basically harvested 1,600 animals. You know, the process was they would go to local processing plants, tribes and other groups that were interested were invited to come and pick up carcasses, basically. You know, and in talking with the processing plants and talking with people that participated in it, you would have people that would drive 4 or 5 hours, pick up a carcass in the back of a pickup, and drive it 4 or 5 hours back to their reservations or back to their home. You know, there were times where animals weren't picked up, and anyone that's, you know, harvest animals and process your own meat, you know, if you leave something out 8 hours, the top part, you know, there's a lot of meat you end up trimming off. And so when I looked at it just strictly from that point, you know, and saying, is there any improvements? That was one that struck me, is that when you were harvesting 1,600 animals, you were losing 20% of the meat. Now, is that respectful? I didn't think so. You know, and I brought the conversation back to our tribes. You know, Intertribal Buffalo Council, we're a tribal organization started in the grassroots manner with 58 tribes committed to restoring buffalo and protecting buffalo across the country. And so, you know, there were these little things that, you know, people consider management, which we've seen a way and the opportunity to step in and say, hey, there's got to be a better way to do this, you know, until such time as we can change this IBMP that is dictating management in Yellowstone. You know, we need to try to find the best way to work within these parameters that have already been established and do it in a respectful way.
All right. Thanks for that, Jim. Got another caller we want to go to. We're going to bring in Corey, who is in Wyatt, California, tuned in online. Corey, welcome to the hour, and what would you like to know?
Hi, thanks so much for having me, and thanks for everybody on the show. I'd like to thank President Azier for having that buffalo herd there in Fort Belknap. My name is Corey Massio, and I'm on the Council of Pateo Yate, which is an intertribal nonprofit who works to protect the Yellowstone herd and promote wild buffalo. I'd like to just make a few comments, and I have a question for Jim Stone of ITBC. My comments are that I believe brucellosis is a lie about buffalo having brucellosis. I believe they actually have the antibodies. That's why they don't abort their babies. We've been watching them for thousands of hours. They don't abort their babies. We believe that they're not disease risk at all. We believe brucellosis is a tool that the Department of Livestock is using to promote the slaughter. I do agree with Jim that the big problem is the laws of Montana, that the laws are dictating that the last wild buffalo are actually livestock. That's why the Department of Livestock is managing them. I believe we have to change that law immediately. And my last comment is I'd just like to quote the founder of Pateo Yate, my adopted mother, Rosalie Little Thunder. She says, Montana's cattle ranches are being taken care of, but the public's one remaining population of wild buffalo is being massacred. And my question for Jim Stone of Intertribal Buffalo Council is, are you participating in the slaughter of the Yellowstone herd? My reports from the field say that ITBC is actively participating in the slaughter of thousands of the last wild buffalo. Jim, are you participating in that, and why?
All right, Corey, hang out on the line for us. Jim, go ahead.
I guess, you know, that's the crux of the issue in Indian country. You know, I think, again, I'll go back to my statement just a few minutes ago. Intertribal Buffalo Council is comprised of 58 tribes across the United States committed to buffalo management, buffalo restoration, bringing them back to their tribes. I think President Azier could answer this question as well. You know, we look at these situations and see, you know, we could get caught up in terminology. You know, tribes harvest buffalo from our herds on a regular basis. We've been harvesting buffalo since time immemorial. You know, and looking at this situation of animals needing to be harvested from Yellowstone, you know, we do distribute those animals to our tribes. You know, we are incorporating that buffalo meat into school lunch programs. You know, you have the Salish Kootenai tribe, which is harvesting animals for use by their tribal members. You have treaty hunting tribes, which are out there hunting the animals and harvesting. So, you know, if you're asking if we're participating, that's a pretty simple question to answer. Yes, we are. You know, we are attempting to change the paradigm of management, which is in Yellowstone National Park and the greater Yellowstone area, for the benefit of the buffalo. I think you'll see some of the results of our work is in play right now, and the fact that Yellowstone National Park and the state of Montana have an EIS out where they're looking at changing the management of the Yellowstone National Park.
And Jim, I also wanted to ask you, you know, our caller Corey brought up, and I think it's the second time we've heard it on the show today, that brucellosis isn't doing what people are saying it is. Anything to that challenge?
You know, I think that's the, again, you know, that's the scare tactic that is being used by, you know, the ranching community in Montana. That's the fear that they're saying that, you know, they don't want any buffalo. You know, like as an organization, we move buffalo from federal parks to all of our tribes that have herds. You know, right now we have over 50 herds, between 15 and 20,000 buffalo on tribal lands, over 1 million acres of tribal land. We cannot get animals from South Dakota into Montana because of this fear of brucellosis and this image. So, no, it's completely made up. It's a competition for grass. And unfortunately, even on our tribal lands, you have a lot of ranchers from off-reservation that control a good part of their land.
All right, thanks for that. We also appreciate our caller, Corey, too. Good Shield, we are getting tight on time here, and I want to make sure that you had a moment to just share your concerns. Anything else you think people should know when it comes to this special herd there in Yellowstone?
Well, I just wanted to throw out there that the main reason this is happening, it's because of subsidized cattle grazing. I mean, that's the bottom line. It's not about brucellosis. It's not about surplus overpopulation. The park can easily sustain 10 to 12,000 buffalo, no problem. And that's within the park boundaries. And there's a lot of public land outside of the park boundaries that, you know, could support a lot more than that. But because of the Department of Livestock and their subsidies, they've become livestock pretty much, and you know, it comes down to grass and who gets to eat it. And we feel that tribal people need to have more say so over the management, because what's happening right now is mismanagement. It's not a management plan. And we witnessed tribal hunters waiting for the buffalo to come near the hunting zones, and we witnessed the Department of Livestock hazing the buffalo away from hunting grounds into the capture facilities. Once they're in those capture facilities, these cattle trucks come in and they'll load them up and they'll drive them 8 to 10 hours away. I mean, by the time they get to the slaughter facilities, at least 40% of the meat is damaged because they gore each other. I mean, they pack them in those trailers so tightly. But I guess really what I would say is anybody out there who has a passion for anything wild and the ecosystems that need to thrive, you know, these buffalo need to be here for the ecosystem. But we invite anybody to come out here and stand with the buffalo. You know,
and Good Shield, I also wanted to ask you, does any of this have to do with tourism?
To be, you know, other than witnessing the atrocity that's happening to the buffalo.
All right, Good Shield, one more question for you. Does any of this have to do with tourism?
Well, I think that's why they stop at May 15th, because once there's millions of people here to witness it, they definitely don't want that. You know, because the national parks are involved in it, so of course they don't want blood on their hands, but it's there. They just are trying to hide it. And our job at BFC is just to document it and put it out there for the world to see, and hopefully if anybody feels passionate enough to do something and to speak up for those wild things that don't have a voice, you know, we invite you to come out here. And, you know, that's all I really have to say. You know, We're all connected, and these buffalo are needed here in the ecosystem. And 3,000 is a dangerously low number. There could be a lot more buffalo here.
All right. Thank you for joining us today, Good Shield Aguilar. And President Azure, we have about a minute before we have to wrap up here. Anything you want to leave us with?
Yeah, I would kind of echo both what Jim and the other gentleman talked about, that this is a a tribal issue. And if we don't get involved, at least here in the state of Montana, then they're going to dictate how this is done. And we've done so far, I would say in the last 3 or 4 years, we've made a huge outcry, attention getter, by showing up and letting state legislators here in the state of Montana know that we're not going to stand for these anti-buffalo bills that are introduced. But I think we have to do our part and continue to inform, educate as many tribal members and non-tribal members as we can that this is a serious matter, and it involves the continued existence of this animal, and it's right now in the state of Montana, it's being singled out. And it is for grass on public lands. And I think that we need to enforce or en masse let the state of Montana legislative body know that tribes are here. We're going to stand up for this animal. We're going to stand with it, and that we're not going to back down.
All right. Thank you, President Azure. Thank you for joining us. We also know that you are following a bill that is currently out there. We do appreciate your time with us today, President Mark Azure, also Good Shield Aguilar and Jim Stone. Thank you all for sharing your thoughts and our callers, too. It is always our honor to open our talking circle to hear what people are thinking. And we're going to do it again. Same time tomorrow here on our Native Airwaves. And we are inviting you back. And also want to thank our crew here at Native America Calling, Tristan Autone, Monica Brain, Andy Murphy, and Stephen Emmons. I'm Tara Gatewood. We'll be back tomorrow.
Go tell your honey not to worry. No, don't be scared. Oh, yes, I swear, because we have affordable care.
Getting insured is easy. Call 1-800-318-2596 or visit healthcare.gov/tribal. A message from the Centers for Medicare and Medicaid Services.
Oh-ho.
When you file online for your PFD, every Alaskan can support Native America Calling. Just use Pick, Click, Give, and select KNBA-FM, Kiwanis Broadcast Corporation. With one donation at a time, good things will happen all over Alaska.
The Gathering of Nations Powwow, North America's biggest powwow, invites all young Native women to compete for the title of Miss Indian World. The pageant starts April 21st and culminates with the crowning at the Gathering of Nations Powwow. Find applications and more at gatheringofnations.com.
Native America Calling is produced in the Annenberg National Native Voice Studios in Albuquerque, New Mexico by Kiwanis Broadcast Corporation, a Native nonprofit media organization located in Anchorage, Alaska. Funding is provided by the Corporation for Public Broadcasting, the Annenberg Foundation, the McCune Charitable Foundation, and the Ford Foundation. Music is provided by Brent Michael Davids. Native Voice One, the Native American Radio Service.